changing things. Yeah, good. And then Saturday we have men's breakfast. Saturday, right? 8 o'clock, all the guys, we get to go play. So we're going to clean. That's what we're going to do after. Everybody can clean. Yeah, so you. Awesome. Okay, cool. Even I know, well, my mom taught me, you know, with a wooden spoon. Okay, bring candy too. Awesome. So we got lots of stuff to doing, right? Ministry. Sweet. Now, let's put Pastor Elliot on the spot. See if we can get a good question. Any questions? None. You went over a lot of stuff. You're a theologian.
No, that was very condensed too. I shouldn't try to do these things and cover so much ground. But I think one of the things that really stuck out to me, sometimes this is why we need to read and thank God we're in a church that teaches us, right? And we need to be in this time in terms of discernment, right? Taught by the Spirit. But this warfare thing is really an issue, and it's not just cherry picking. Sometimes we need to be informed, yes, and then we need to think about the implications of the truth that we hear and then move to application. That's why taking the time to look at the background of some of these things, right? And even we say that as a challenge, but it's important to look at those things, because then I think our view of spiritual warfare, maybe we started out with our capacity here, but studying these things, as we do that, our capacity should
totally cool that you started in Ephesians 1 talking about our identity specifically, and then you jumped over to this is before we hit Ephesians 6, which many of us do all the time. We put on our whole armor. But in 14, and maybe you could speak to this just a little bit, it says pray for spiritual wisdom. And that formula, if we're first checking our identity with both us and God, and then asking for wisdom before we try spiritual warfare, is that what that's kind of leading toward?
That's a good question, and I think there's this. This is why you think about even our natural development, right? That's why I mentioned, like, when we first become believers, you don't learn all these heavy theological, you know, like terms, right? But sometimes what we need to do is slow down and go through those, and I think there is a rationale of logic for why Paul puts these things first before he moves into that, right? That when we look at Ephesians like 1 through 3, it's information. That's what I'm saying, be informed. Paul is unpacking these things before he's ever asking them to do something, per se. And this is how God has to do with us. This is why it's good for us to be able to slow down, concentrate, and take in truth, right? And it's so much as almost like sitting on your hands, right? Look what God did with the early church. I know I'm going off maybe a little bit. When Jesus raised, he told the disciples, go to Jerusalem, go in the upper room, and wait. Almost as if to say, you're not in control. Go wait, go pray. Right? Something's going to happen. You don't know necessarily what's going to happen, but right, those things proceeded. And it shows like, an emphasis, we should be have our eyes on what God is doing or what God has done. And I think in Ephesians chapter 1, Pastor, you could, you know, others could correct me, but there it makes sense to take in these things and slow down and think, like, look, I know we live in a society, we really want to get to the application stuff, but if you try to fight warfare and you don't know that God is trying to mold you into the image of his son, if you're trying to do warfare and you don't know the blood that you he desires to present you before himself without blame, right? right? Spotless, without blemish. See, that's finished work stuff. The finished work stuff is the stuff that he has done, right? The finished work stuff is stuff that, yes, I want my eyes illuminated to that. I want spiritual wisdom, because there is going to come a point where I do have to make decisions. And I think there's a refrain there. Before the first time he says walk, or he said, that's in chapter 4. And I know it can be kind of imposing, or I can't think of, my academic mind is failing me. We can kind of impose things on the structure of the text. But if you just watch Ephesians 1 through 3, that's why a lot of people divide those up as, okay, this is all information, even theology, what God is, and then the practical stuff gets to 4. I don't think we should just force those hard, you know, dichotomies, because there's much to glean. If all you ever read was Ephesians 1, you'd be totally blessed out of your socks. And you should do something with it. Amen?
Amen.
But I do think those getting an understanding of that, and same thing, man, and I think those of us in ministry can attest, when if you send people out to do and confront confrontational things, and they're not ready, you know, maybe more like leadership things, right? We're going in this enthusiasm and boldness, but sometimes in leadership or other things, people go out, man, and lions can, and they can hurt other people. You know, they can do damage with other people. You go out, you got this big old sword, nobody has never taught you how to deal, you know. This is my sword, right? And nobody teaches you how to carefully, precisely, accurately wield it. You're going to hurt people. And you're going to, maybe even in your zeal, damage people, right? Because you don't understand the body, you don't understand, you know, the gifts, you don't understand all these other things that God has done. Now, I'm not trying to be prescriptive when I say this, as if you've broken some kind of rule if you don't read Ephesians 1 through, but how would you read a letter? Whenever, if you know, think about it, I know we don't do this often, but email or whatever, you don't start in the middle or at the end. You don't read one part of the message, you know, right? Oh, I'm going to turn to chapter 4 and read a couple of verses. Is that how you read a letter? No. Oh, back of us, those of us who can remember when letters used to be written, handwritten, you wouldn't just turn in the middle and then pick up and start reading that. That's another challenge in terms of us warfare in the Christian community. We have an embarrassment of riches in terms of the literature that we have. Anybody who's been on a mission field and you've seen, or stories of, that you've read of different missionaries where they may have had one little scrap or one little verse that they held on to and they made it theirs. What's our excuse for having all of it? Right? I mentioned Jonah. You can read Jonah in 8.5, 9 minutes with commentary in the middle of it. 4 chapters, but how many of us have maybe said, I'm not chiding anyone here, but I'm just making a point. Our warfare, some of it is that, if I were to say anything from tonight, is slow down. I got a heavy foot when I drive. Like, so if I'm going like 60 in a, you know, 65, right? Usually faster than that, and I hit a 25, oh, that's grueling to try to, you know, I don't want to run into any kids, you know, if it's a school zone or something like that. But, like, if I'm used to going 60, 25 is going to be uncomfortable, right? And sometimes for us to get understanding things, we have to slow down. That's why it's so good, Pastor, you know, going through verses, going through a series where there's actually expositional teaching, right? And not just here a verse, there a verse, everywhere a verse, you know, kind of picking out verses. Because we need time to train and to learn and to be equipped. Tim is talking. Any other last few minute questions? Or
questions, questions, questions?
I asked about Judges, about how do you relate
the warfare. I just love this. It says, now all the nations which the Lord left to test Israel by them, that is all that had not experienced any of the wars of Canaan, only in order that the generations of the sons of Israel might be taught war, those who had not experienced it formally.
What verse is that?
That's chapter 3, 1 and 2 of Judges. Yeah. And
and what is that? It's amazing, right? Because God takes them through the Exodus, right? You have Joshua, who's the leader there, right? And you look at the change from Moses. Moses is probably I'm going to serve the Lord. You know, they were not quite able to be successful in all of those conquests, going and taking the land. And then here we go to Judges. And it is like this testing period, because every man does what's right in his own eyes. Right? And there was some solidarity under Joshua, but then when the people won't really commit, then they go through these cycles, right? Where God raises up a judge, right? And it's not like judge sitting behind a bench like we typically do, but typically it's a warrior judge. It's someone who's going to be fighting and making decisions, right? And then you know the pattern, right? They cry, they sin, they cry out, God comes in, he rescues, he raises up a judge, and then they just keep repeating the cycle. So that is true. But then learning warfare, and then that's, because think about the ancient Near East, the nations that are around them, right? And God, even in the Exodus, took them a long way out, because he's not ready for warfare. And then let alone generations. And I would say, man, what a practical application real quick. For us, what have we taught the next generation who's not familiar how to do warfare? Right? How to navigate the things that they have to navigate. Right? And so we can't just be hands off or abrogate that, right? Because man, you're only one generation away from the world.
Awesome. You want to close us out, Pastor?